So the first reading this morning is from one of my favorite books in the Old Testament, one that we do not read nearly as much as we should. It's called the Song of Solomon, and I'll be reading from chapter 2, verses 8 through 13. And the Song of Solomon is a love poem, and it works on the level of just honoring human love as the greatest gift that we have. And it has been a book that has fascinated the mystics of the church, for they see in it a description of their own mystical encounter with the divine and how it unlocks our depths and our longings and our desires and our vulnerability, but also brings us into a sense of connection, which is just so essential for our well-being. So we'd get just a flavor of the Song of Solomon. Let us listen for God's word. The voice of my beloved, look, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands, behind our wall, gazing in at the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, "Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. For now the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth its figs, and the vines are in blossom, they give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away." So after a long period of time, we leave John's Gospel in chapter 6, and we jump into Mark's Gospel today in chapter 7. And as we have been doing in the past weeks, we're jumping around a little bit. So it's Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 8. Then I jump to verses 14 and 15, and then finally verses 21 through 23. And again, let us listen for the voice of God. "Now when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, they noticed that some of his disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they thoroughly wash their hands, thus observing the tradition of the elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And there are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups, pots, and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, 'Why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands?' He said to them, 'Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites. As it is written, this people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines. You abandon the commandment of God and hold to human tradition.' Then he called the crowd again and said to them, 'Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile. For it is from within, from the human heart that evil intentions come. Fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So I think both of these passages are trying to point us to the path that we are called to take, which is the path of love. It's the path of love. An overused word, but it is, if we can get our hearts and minds around it, it is the path that will lead us to true life. So this is easy to see in the Song of Solomon. After all, it is a poem about love. And it illustrates some of the essential qualities of the experience of love, what it asks of us. And really what love asks of us, according to Song of Solomon, is this experience of letting go of self-preoccupation, which is essential for any authentic experience of love. It is the opening of the heart and the trusting of another with one's heart, which is the great leap of faith involved in all love. Mark's passage is also about love, the love which purifies and transforms the heart. And Mark contrasts the transformational possibilities of love with the stultifying results of legalism. Legalism is the fatal flaw of so much of human behavior. Legalists, fundamentalists, zealots are particularly tempted to take this path of legalism. And this path wants to have the life-giving energy of love, because that's what love does. It makes us alive. It wants to have that same life-giving energy while keeping the self firmly in charge. And I think what both of these passages are suggesting to us is that if we want the path of love, we have to engage in a decentering of the self, of a letting go of the self and its self-preoccupations. And this is not an easy thing to do. It takes constant daily effort. And I've been talking about this group that I'm involved with on Thursday nights with Joseph Azizi and Cynthia Bourgeau. And the first 30 minutes of our time is spent just in letting go of the stress in our bodies. Because Joseph says, until we are in a place where we have let go in our bodies, we'll be distorting any possibility of really perceiving the presence of love. So love asks us to let go. And if we don't engage in that basic process, what we're going to default to is this energy of legalism, which is about judgment and comparison and fear and anger and the wish that we can have control. And all of these things are the very opposite of love. We have to trust. We have to trust. So let's look at Song of Solomon first, which tries to get us into the energy and the playfulness of love. The energy of love is playful. And it begins with the bride, who is the speaker in this section of the Song of Solomon. And first she hears her beloved, and then she sees him. And she describes her beloved as a gazelle, as a young stag leaping over the mountains and bounding over the hills towards her. And there's a playfulness to this energy, let's face it, and a sensuality to this energy, which is playful. Upstate, we have an apple tree, an old apple tree, right outside of our kitchen window. And this year, it has produced a prodigious amount of fruit. And almost every day, there are deer that gather around the tree to eat the apples that have fallen. Sometimes it's a couple of doe with a young spotted little deer. And sometimes it's a solitary young stag who is just magnificent in appearance. And whenever he feels the need to run and he starts to leap down the hill or up the hill, it really takes your breath away. I mean, the power and the beauty of this young stag is impossible for any doe or human being to resist. I mean, I get the comparison as I read this passage. And then it says that the bride sees her beloved peering at her through the lattice in her window. And the deer and I are often peering at each other through the lattice in our kitchen window. Their senses are keen. That is key to their survival. And so they're aware of every movement I make, and they measure whether or not I am a threat. And so they either stay there and eat the apples, or they just begin to bolt. And there's this deep exchange of energy between us. And then comes the call of the bride from her beloved. And he says, "Come, my love. The winter is past. The rains are over. The flowers appear. The season of glad songs has come. The cooing of the turtle dove flows in the land. The fig trees are forming their first fruit, and the fragrance of the blossoming vines fill the air." And then he repeats, "Come, my love, come, my fair one." I mean, who could resist this appeal, right? It's a call to life in its fullness and its sensual delight. All the senses are engaged. It's the joy of being an embodied self. And all of us have tasted of this. Perhaps it was our first childhood crush. Maybe it was the joy of the endless summers of childhood. How delightful, life-giving. This past Monday morning, Sedona and Ben came to the house. It was one of the days where Roseanne is watching them, and they were planning later that day, Sedona and Ben, to see little Olive, their cousin, for the very first time. Roseanne had gone to the hospital before, but the kids had not been allowed. So Sedona, who's here this morning, "Hi, honey," was so excited. And she kept telling me how cute little babies are and how cute their little cheeks are. And then she would just grab my cheeks to reinforce the point of how cute their cheeks are. And I was not with them when they went later that day, but Roseanne told me about the scene of Olive had not been sleeping that day. And so she's in Sedona's arms, and little Olive falls asleep as her daddy, Rob, is gently playing the ukulele. And how touching, Roseanne said, that scene was. And I thought, well, that could be a part of the Song of Solomon, right? Just this heart-opening experience where we sense that our lives are just so much more beautiful than we allow them to be, or our world allows it to be. And I agreed with Sedona that babies are cute. I can't argue that point, but that for me, what really captivates me about babies is that something more. It's the stillness. It's the presence. It's the being that tastes to us of another dimension. And it does something to us. It quietens our own flooded minds and hearts. It opens us into another dimension. And I think that's what the Song of Solomon is really trying to get us to do. It's pointing to that something more, that quality of presence and being, which is just too much for the human heart to bear. Beauty beyond beauty. Love beyond the capacity of our coarse and hardened hearts to experience. And the Song of Solomon is trying to get our hearts to soften and to come alive and to open ourselves to the qualities of love that our world and ourselves are absolutely starving for. And as I said at the beginning, unless we are intentional about this, our hearts just simply are going to be flooded by all the other energies in and among us. It takes some time. So I recommend this practice. Wake up in the morning and consciously relax every part of your body, from the head to the toes, to the toes to the head, and begin to sense what happens in your body. And if you stay with it long enough, you will also, I promise, begin to feel this tenderness in your heart, in your solar plexus. And I believe it is that opening that allows us to begin to encounter those energies of the very heart of God that are always inside of us. So the mystics spent so much time on this little book, Song of Solomon, because it echoed and mirrored their own experience of the divine, the inexpressible intimacy and vulnerability, depths of our longing and our desire to be in that flow of love. It's life-giving. We die without it. And this is the beginning place of all authentic religion. Without it, without what John Wesley called a heart strangely warmed, then religion inevitably goes to our default energies, and that's where religion gets into trouble, right? It goes to the direction of legalism, and that's where Mark 7 comes into play. Mark 7 is exhibit A in how not to do religion, and yet how the church is constantly tempted to do religion. You know, we lead with things like law and doctrines and polity and policy and dockets and meetings and organizational flowcharts and bylaws and Robert's Rules of Order. And it's not that these things don't have a place. They do. But they were never meant to be the core of who we are. And when that is our starting point, when that is where our heart is, then that is when we really get into trouble. The Pharisees asked Jesus, "Why don't your followers wash their hands before eating?" And, you know, on the surface, you know, that's a good question to ask, right? Every parent in the world has asked that question. And you know, it's a good thing to wash our hands, particularly in this time of global pandemic. It's a good thing to wash what we buy at the market. It's a good thing to wash our cups and our cooking utensils. And Jesus answers them in a very curious way. You know, he quotes Isaiah and he calls them hypocrites. He says, Isaiah was right when he said, you worship with your lips, but your hearts are far, far away. There's this great temptation, as I said, unless we really learn to bring our hearts online every day, we'll just immediately go to our default. And all of those defensive energies of the vulnerable self. And then we prop up the self through all of these, you know, fixations with rules and positions and all the rest. And I've been 37 years of ministry, I think now. I lose count. And I've been in those 37 years to an awful lot of presbytery meetings where the energy was leading with, you know, legalism, and the heart seemed to be so far away, hard to find. Sue Smith can probably describe this better than I can, but it was some years ago in our presbytery, and maybe Linda remembers better than I do too, that the leadership in the presbytery was trying to figure out ways of making presbytery meetings more worshipful, right? Because what happens, we get in these meetings and we just go to our default, right? And so they decided to experiment with making sort of the presbytery meeting flow as if it were an order of worship. So, you know, be like a call to worship and a prayer of confession and other parts of worship somehow coming to fore throughout the logic of the meeting itself. And, you know, it seemed like a beautiful idea to me to bring our consciousness to sort of a worshipful place, a heart place. But, you know, I think we began the meetings with a call to worship. And our book of order says that we have to begin and end each meeting with a prayer. And that a call to worship is not technically a prayer, and that we were in violation of the book of order. And so it's just like, you know, this heart idea just got squeezed to death by this legalistic impulse. And it's like, this is what we do. We're cut off from love. We're cut off from our hearts. We live in fear and defensiveness. And because our lives are choked off from love, we're angry and justifiably so. And we're looking for ways to make ourselves feel justified. And a cheap way of making ourselves feel justified is by knocking someone else down. And so, you know, Jesus' words on one sense may not make a lot of sense, but maybe on another they made perfect sense, because what he was asking the Pharisees and the religious leaders to do is to stop leading with this energy of legalism, which is all about comparison and judgment and control, and to start meeting people in their brokenness and to lead with love. And what's the energy of love? Love always invites us to let go. Think about your deepest experiences of love. It's playful, just like the Song of Solomon. It's tender. It's vulnerable. It's kind. It's gentle. It's forgiving and understanding and humble and grateful and uncalculated and unpretentious and just deeply and fully present in each and every moment. True love is always aware of the heart and its condition. And that's why it takes stock daily of its energies and works hard to heal and to correct them. And so Jesus talked about the things that defile and lists all these, you know, things that aren't so good, right? And my translation of Jesus is, he's just saying, every day, start your day by asking, what's going on in my heart? take a look at the heart and just ask the question, has greed begun to take over my heart today and to be with that? Or it might ask, has judgment or gossip about another found a piece of my heart today in which it is beginning to take root and to pollute my heart? Has lust in the form of treating any other person like an object of my desire or my own agenda begun to find a place in my heart and torn me away from the nature of true love? Is my heart less than truthful or fully transparent? Do people really see who I am? Or is my heart full of pride? Is it unable or unwilling to allow others to receive my unconditional love? That's what defiles, said Jesus. So this is what Jesus wants us to pay attention to, our hearts, every day. To look at them, to work at burning away that stuff that pollutes us from within, and to once again learn to take the risk of vulnerability and trust. That's the only way that love works, vulnerability and trust. So may God give us the grace and the vision to see what our work truly is. And then the courage, actually, to do it. May it be so. Amen.